Hey friends, it's time for another loving conflict reading, fireside chat. We're into chapter 3 at this point, and we've been talking about forbidden needs. So yesterday we talked about where they came from, that there seems to be a subset of universal human needs that we each have that consistently went unmet when we were little. And so we came to believe that we couldn't have those needs met, that basically they were forbidden. And we made the case that as a result of that, those needs picked our partners because we didn't get those needs met, so we picked someone who does know how to get those needs met. That's why the infatuation stage is so much fun, because you and your partner are consistently getting their forbidden needs met without having to ask. Then we talked about what happens after you move in together, and now you do have to ask, but you can't ask because it's forbidden. And so you have to talk about it, but you can't talk about it. And so what the unconscious does is it chooses to communicate those needs as judgments of your partner. And it kind of makes sense, because if I have a need for being touched, for instance, and I didn't get that need met in my childhood for whatever reason consistently, and I picked someone who's really good at touching, and we had a very touchy infatuation period. Now we're both really busy. I'm not being touched as much as I enjoy being touched. So I could just say, you know, I'm really missing being touched. I've been really enjoying that about our relationship. Except I can't say that because my unconscious believes it's forbidden for me to ask, because every time I asked when I was little, the answer was no. And the unconscious doesn't know that we grew up. And it doesn't know that the person you're talking about isn't your mom. They don't know that you're grown up, and they don't know that you're in a grown-up relationship. Your unconscious doesn't. And so if you need to talk about it, but you can't, the way that you end up talking about it, I would say, you know, I used to think that you were kind of a warm person, but you're really kind of a cold fish, aren't you? And that feels to me like I'm sharing this desire that I have for connecting and being touched. Of course, to my partner, all it sounds like is I attack them without any reason. So we're going to start now on the second half of the Forbidden Needs chapter, chapter 3 in my book, Loving Conflict. And the subtitle is Healing Forbidden Needs. So it's good that you joined us, because we're going to learn how to heal those needs now. Forbidden needs, even after they've been identified and are successfully and consistently getting met in the present, may continue to seem to have a special meaning for you. They always remain a little harder to ask for and always seem a little more satisfying when they are met. This is why forbidden needs pick our partners, because we pick people who are really good at meeting those particular needs. And it's really satisfying to get those needs met, because we couldn't get them met when we were little, and we gave up on them, so we didn't get them met for decades before we found our spouse. I think some part of the psyche is still surprised that it's okay to be loved in this way. Maybe the abstract impressionistic painting that the psyche uses to represent our needs in your inner landscape slowly builds layer upon layer of gratitude, but the undercoating of the loss of connection when you were young is still faintly visible and may even occasionally show through. In my relationship with Elise, we noticed that when what used to be forbidden needs get stimulated, no longer triggered. That's important. Before you do this work, forbidden needs get triggered. Your partner does something that trips off your need for respect, if that's a forbidden need, or they don't touch you, or whatever. And because you can't really even talk to yourself about these needs, the uncomfortable feeling that arises in you, which is really just the message the need is sending you, that there's an unsatisfied need inside of you, is so confusing to deal with that we just explode with the anger and story and judgment about our partner, because we can't talk about it any other way, or so we believe. It's not unusual to find ourselves getting annoyed at our partner, which often shows up in a less than inviting tone of voice. This is miles away from judging and attacking, but it's still something to watch out for. You can learn how to ask clearly and directly for what you need, to accept their answer with equanimity. Remember, we only make requests in NVC. So even after you've pushed through the terror of actually asking for this forbidden need to be met by your partner, no is still an acceptable answer for them because it's not a demand. And if they choose to meet your need in that moment, to fully embrace the pleasure of that connection. This is another thing that gets in the way of our getting the benefit of forbidden needs. Even when we do ask, we're so churned up believing that this need is forbidden to us that it's hard to take in the love and the satisfaction of getting the need satisfied. It's an important part of relationship maintenance to keep making sure that you are consistently getting your own needs met while also meeting the needs of your partner. Basically, that's the teamwork method. Consistently noticing what it is you're needing, communicating what you're needing in beautiful, nonviolent language, and noticing what it is your partner is needing. And if you don't know, getting curious and asking and having needs-based conversations and negotiations so that both of you are consistently getting your needs met. That essentially is living happily ever after. That's the NVC needs-based definition of living happily ever after. So when you find yourself in judgment mode, you want not only to stop and look for an unmet need, but you also want to look to see if it's a forbidden need that has gotten triggered, because those are the ones that are not going to go away. Forbidden needs are caused by consistently not getting a need met, so consistency in healing them is incredibly important. In the end, it's important to emphasize that your anger is not the result of your partner's refusal to meet your needs. We have seen this happen again and again with our clients. When they become able to speak about their feelings being the direct result of their own unmet needs and not about their partner's wrongdoing, they find that their partner will delight in hearing about their needs. So again, we can't emphasize enough that the form in which you experience, feel about, think about, and communicate your needs is absolutely key in order to live happily ever after and have a mature relationship. The difference between communicating the beauty of a need that you have, even one that's unsatisfied, and calling your partner names, or even just believing that there's something bad about them or that they've done something wrong, the difference between the field of battle and the field of non-judgment and love. People love meeting the needs of others, especially when it's something they do well. And remember, your partners are hand-picked because they do your forbidden needs well. That's what's so beautiful about this whole process. And which is the opposite of what the imago people believe. They believe that you pick someone who has the same limitations as your parents. So I think that Harville Hendricks got as confused in the same way that many of our clients do, that because your partner's not meeting your needs, therefore it's a limitation of theirs. It's not. You spent between 18 months and 36 months during the infatuation period experiencing them meeting your needs. I don't know how Harville could have missed that. Obviously, they are capable of meeting your needs. They won't do it if you don't tell them what your need is, or if in the process of telling them what your need is, you judge them horrendously. That doesn't invite in the kind of love and support that you get from an NVC request. They simply need to know there is a need to be met, rather than having to defend themselves against the judgment that they aren't meeting the needs that they didn't know we had because we never asked outright. Judgments don't count. Effectively communicating your forbidden needs makes a world of difference. Literally, you end up living in a different world if you request your forbidden needs as needs, which is what they are. It's a mistake that they're forbidden. That's a limiting belief. They weren't even forbidden when you were young. Your parents weren't able to meet them. But those needs were still always just perfectly fine needs, and you deserve to have them met. Whoever you are, whatever your forbidden need is, you deserve to have that need met. And there are people out there who love meeting that need. And if you're in a relationship, it's very likely that the person sitting on the couch with you is that person. It will make the world a different place also, peaceful, satisfying, and filled to overflowing with love. This is our peace work. This is our world change work, just doing this piece. So we did a little bit yesterday on how to identify forbidden needs. We're going to go more deeply into that right now, because if you're going to work with them and heal them, you need to be able to identify them. Identifying forbidden needs is the subtitle here. There are several ways to learn what your and your partner's forbidden needs are. These needs reside in the unconscious, so even if you are a self-aware person, they may be elusive. Here are some ways that they surface as behaviors, which can help you identify that a forbidden need is present. This is material. Besides discovering forbidden needs, this idea about how to identify them, because I've been doing this for 15 years, and it's my contention that pretty much every couple who comes in, I get to witness this and deal with it. And so discovering the skills for how to identify them is another core value and skill set that we've learned and that we're passing on to you in this book and today in this reading. So the first one is listening for judgments. Judgments, especially repeated judgments, whether or not they are spoken out loud, offer a great way to uncover forbidden needs. They also make it fairly transparent what the need is. It's the opposite of the judgment. So if I call you a slob, what's my need? Neediness. If I say that you never touch me, what's my need? It's to be touched. So if you keep finding fault with the way other people don't appreciate you, you likely have a forbidden need for being seen. If you feel like you're the only one carrying the load, then you likely have a forbidden need for support and teamwork. Any of the universal human needs can become forbidden if that need goes consistently unmet when you're young. And it will show itself through judgments you make of others or even of yourself. So what we're suggesting here is that you listen to what you say, the judgments, and in the beginning what I tell my clients is don't stop judging, because there's a lot of good information in there, but you don't want to slam your partner with judgments. And so my recommendation is that you do this. You say, if you have a judgment on the tip of your tongue, you can't think of what it might be about, because you'd have to kind of talk it out and listen to it, which is how I learn, is you can say this: I know this is a judgment and so not true about you, but the thing I notice that I'm thinking is, and then you say the judgment. And it takes all the sting out of it, and it engages them in helping you to identify what the opposite of the judgment is. Number two, out of proportion responses. The intensity of reaction to situations that trigger forbidden needs tends to be out of proportion to the current situation. For example, you explode when someone spills a little milk, when all it would take is a sponge to clean it up. A disproportionately upset reaction points to a forbidden need. The current experience triggers a force from the past, when the more intense reaction may have been appropriate and proportional. Also, the energy, emotional energy, has been building up over decades. And so if your partner is exploding at you and the situation doesn't warrant that, don't react. Don't blame them for overreacting. Identify, this is a forbidden need. Listen to the content, reverse it, and then act as if they said that reversed. Beautiful thing. So, you know, if they're exploding over spilled milk, you can, like, blast them for overreacting, or you can just go, well, geez, this must be a forbidden need. What's the opposite of this overreaction to spilled milk? They're concerned about having been blamed. possibly. And so you check it out with them. I'm wondering if you're feeling like you're being blamed or held responsible for things that are just accidents. Number three, rigidity. Any moral judgment that you have and feel very strongly about can be the result of forbidden needs. Remember, we said moral judgments of people are thinking that they're bad or wrong, that as a person, not their actions necessarily, but them as a person. For example, if you know something is true about the other person, even if they deny it, it's likely stemming from a forbidden need of yours. We judge people's behavior all the time, but a belief or opinion that's rigidly held is likely to be a forbidden need surfacing. So these needs are not reacting to the present time, so they don't get updated. So they end up being very rigid. They don't move at all, and they don't respond to current data because the 3-year-old is in a box that has no windows or doors. He doesn't get any updated information about what's going on in the present. And so the beliefs that forbidden needs are based on are incredibly rigid. Look for words like always and never, the candy coating of despair that surrounds forbidden needs. Our definition of despair is sadness plus forever. And that's why people tend to speak about their partner as always and never. So you've probably experienced this. You do like 80% of the cooking. You leave a dish in the sink. Your partner says, "You know, you never clean the kitchen. You never do any work in the kitchen. Never." Now, you could defend yourself because nobody ever never does anything, but that would be missing the value of what we're talking about here, which is that's a clue that they're in trance, in the forbidden need trance. And you don't want to have a fight with their 3-year-old because that will not heal their 3-year-old. What you're going to want to do is help them identify what the need is and get them to ask for what it is they're really wanting. And then the healing begins. Number four, have you ever felt this way before? This was actually the question that set off all this research. People would say these wildly rigid, out of proportion things that clearly weren't about the present. And so I would ask them, "Have you ever felt this before?" And they'd say, "Yeah, he always does this." "No, I don't mean in this relationship." "Well, yeah, my ex-husband did that too. Actually, both of my ex-husbands did. And the big love affair that I had in college also." "Yeah, how about even earlier than that? What about your childhood?" They always go, "Oh, yeah, well, definitely with my parents." They always do that. It's like, "Yeah, have you ever felt this before?" "Yeah, in my family of origin." Bam, there's a forbidden need. That's where it came from. This next one is something I invented, although other people say that they know about this, so it's interesting. I call it the rule of three. This is a special case of ever felt this before. If you have a beef with someone, even if it's really clear to you what they did wrong, and then you notice that you're having those exact same feelings about somebody else, that might be just a coincidence. But if you notice that you are involved in three or more of these exact same situations, and the only thing these people have in common is their relationship to you, it's not a coincidence. It's the rule of three, which says, no matter how sure you are it's each of them, it's not. It's you. It's you. This one is like, don't use logic on it. Don't fight it. Don't try to explain it to yourself. Like, I just made it the rule. Because this rigid behavior, you don't notice, you know, because each instance is so completely convincing that it's them. It's obviously you. And it's obviously you. Uh-oh, it's also obviously you. Sorry, it's not you, it's me. And once you free yourself from the tremendous evidence building that you can do when it's you convinced that it's them, you'll suddenly discover that actually there's plenty of evidence that it's you. And then you get to do healing with it because it's actually a forbidden need. So I want to talk a little bit to the parents that are listening about creating forbidden needs in your kids. One of the traps in the role of parenting is that it can seem like carte blanche to focus on your job of molding your children, which can mask your own self-responsibility not to project or judge on others the needs you mistakenly believe are forbidden to you. I see a lot of parents, as we uncover their forbidden needs, realizing that they have been attacking their kids for not meeting their forbidden needs in the same way they attack their partner. Forbidden needs end up being like a virus that gets passed on from generation to generation. It becomes hereditary. And after I do work with a couple, that especially if they have teenage kids, they will often hire me to help them with their teenagers, because now that they've stopped having those fights, they're hearing their kids have those exact same fights with the exact same words. It's like programming them to mimic the worst part of what's been going on inside your relationship. Don't do that. Be very careful of not projecting your forbidden needs on your kids. So if it's not enough for you to fix your forbidden needs for yourself and your own personal growth, and if it's not enough for you to also do it for your beautiful partner who loves you and is totally willing to be co-healers with you, then if you have kids, at least do it for them. I mean, this is gold, and without it, you, your spouse, your kids, and everybody around you is going to be stuck in a feedback loop that's decades old, truly useless. Living with forbidden needs. Once you know your partner's forbidden needs and understand that these needs can be very difficult for your partner to talk about, you can try being more proactive. For example, you could say, I'm wondering if you are in need of a hug or address whatever their forbidden need is, because I know you've had a stressful week and I know touching is important to you and I love touching you. Bam. Can you feel, I'm tearing up, and I wrote this, it's made up. Can you feel how beautiful it would be if your partner, knowing what your forbidden needs are, anticipate the possibility that you're having a need like that and checks in with you so that you can in fact ask for that need with them reminding you how much they love meeting that need? I live inside that relationship, and I have to tell you, it is yummy. Do this, people. Don't fight with the person who loves you and who knows how to meet your forbidden needs. Engage with them, and if you are them, do this proactive stuff. It's terrific. Asking for what you need. If you're the one with the forbidden need, it's your job to push through the fear and ask for what you need. This is how you be a grown-up, folks. We call stage 3 the mature relationship. This is how you do grown-up. You identify what you need and you ask for it. You don't pout about it. I mean, all of the ways of not asking for your need are basically 3-year-old strategies. Okay, in the beginning, it seems like the biggest risk a person can take, but you handpick this person because they love giving this exact thing, and you can see that your fear is not based in present time reality. This is basically the thing that broke it for me. One of my, what I call my isolator, the voice of these forbidden needs, said something really nasty about Elise to me early on in our relationship. About, you know, she doesn't care about you, she's not a nice person. And I'm like, wait a minute, you just went too far. I know her, I love her, and she's not like that at all. Who are you talking about? Wait a minute, this isn't about her. Bam. This isn't about her. Remember, you handpicked this person because they love you and they love meeting this need in you. Don't judge them as if it's not true, as if you didn't experience this for the whole infatuation period. Over time, you'll find it becomes less and less scary and more fun. Eventually, you'll notice that the part of your life you had given up on will come rushing back and become the most satisfying part of your life and of your relationship. The most satisfying part. The part that you are fighting about right now is actually the potentially most yummy part of your relationship. All you have to do is switch the form in which you're communicating about your needs. I've done this, and I've witnessed it being done over and over and over again. It's totally doable. It is simple. It's not easy. The force of the despair and the history and the story, and we live in a judgmental society, and none of those are any excuses for not doing the right thing, because the benefit is so great. Quick finish here. Once you realize that you've committed to a relationship with someone who is willing to give you the very thing that you thought was forbidden, the commitment becomes the kind of bond that can last a lifetime. Forget about worrying about making your partner promise that they'll be in this for the long haul while you're fighting. They can't know that. Stop fighting. Work this process. And you won't have to worry about them leaving. Who's going to leave somebody who loves you exactly in the place you desire being loved and lets you love them exactly in the place where your strengths are? Nobody's going to do that. As you test this over and over and come to really understand and believe that you are going to consistently get your forbidden needs met, it becomes easier to communicate those needs without anger, fear, or judgment. Your relationship changes in ways that never seemed possible. Really. Walking on eggs right now, and it seems like anything you say is going to start a fight. Do this, and your relationship will change in ways that right now seem impossible. I only work with couples for 6 sessions at a max. This shift is the beginning of the third stage of marriage, the mature relationship, which looks exactly like the infatuation stage, except now it's flexible. Both partners can ask to have their needs met as they arise, all of their needs, even those they mistakenly thought were forbidden. Loving conflict. Max Rivers. That's our 30 minutes together. Thanks for coming by. And we'll be back and we'll be talking about how to use your feelings to identify your needs and to create connection instead of creating upset and separation. It's Max Rivers signing off. And see if you can allow yourself to notice one of the kinds of behaviors that you or your partner is having. And check it out with yourself or them. Is this a forbidden need? Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.